tickets for daughter Lou's professor Lou's introduction. So hello everyone, and welcome to today's tutorial section for CS5152. And I'm excited to have you all here as we dive into the coding essentials for OnCAS. And in this tutorial, we will be exploring the core concepts, tools, and best practice you need to succeed in working with OnCAS data. This is a critical skill set for anyone aiming to tackle the course project challenges. So let's get started. This is the outline today. First, we will go over the essential environment configurations to get the framework up and running. This including setting up your system, whether you are on Ubuntu or Windows, configuring your GPU. Specifically, we recommend NVIDIA GPUs for the compatibility for many open source repository. And you can manage your Python environment through software called Anaconda. And understanding the importance of the version compatibility across various components is important. So next, we will explore an open source repository and learn about its C++, Python, and CUDA extension code. And lastly, I will introduce you to some useful libraries and resources for data processing. And it's important to know that data processing often takes the majority of the time during a project. So it's normal to encounter challenges in this period. So sometimes you may get lucky and work on a project that already have the processed data. And sometimes you only got the raw data sets. And keep in mind that you will come across so many engineering problems, and you should tackle them step by step. So here are some prerequisites. First, it's crucial to choose a stable and widely used operating system. For Linux user, we recommend Ubuntu version 16.04, 18.04, or 20.04. For me personally, I use Ubuntu 20.04. And as they offer better compatibility with most repositories, open source in GitHub. Keep in mind that the latest Ubuntu versions are not recommended right now due to some incompatibilities for some for many projects, for many mature projects. So selecting the right version, you may select the right version according to some readme markdown for some open source project, but just keep in mind that choose the right version will help you avoid so many common issues. And for Windows 10 or 11 users, it is okay too, but I still suggest you to use the Windows subsystems for Linux, which is also called WSL. So many repositories are developed to run in a server-based Ubuntu environment. And often they have no scripts or graphical interface. They rely solely on command line. And you will encounter this when you try to change the code. Since I'm using a Windows laptop, so I will demonstrate a little bit what a configured WSL environment looks like. So first you can just open the command line in your system, and then you will see the normal command line panel here. This is just the environment for Windows, but as you know, for Mac OS or Linux, they all share the base systems for Unix. So many projects are based on this Ubuntu-based servers, which are also based on Unix environment here is the software called Anaconda environment. I will introduce later. And maybe I should. And you can see the directory is mounting on the C drive. So I can just change the directory under my home and check all the files here. And after you install the environment called Conda, you can check the environment with Conda info environments. And you can see that I installed two separate virtual environments here. It's pretty useful to use such virtual environments in your system because for every project open source, you may install so many packages, like you may use Conda install or Hive install to install so many packages to facilitate your project. For example, now I will just show install GPU stats package that use Hive. And it's a Python package management software called Hive, and this user integrated your Conda environment. So you can see that it will install the package in this environment, and then just type GPU stats. You can check the GPU information in your environment. Here I use the Windows laptop. I use RTX 4060, and I have 8,000 megabytes GPU memory, which is quite small memory, but it's enough for you to do some tuning before you actually run the training of on big data sets. You can just pick like one or two data samples out of the big data sets and put it into your Windows laptop, and just run the code and see if they are okay, if they are bug free. So it's pretty important before you just put your code into the server, or the server you rented, or the server you assigned by the department, because the server is usually large memory GPU card, which is quite expensive. So local tuning is very important to keep in mind that. And so that's the Windows subsystems for Linux. And so I personally do not recommend you run under pure Windows or pure like macOS environment. It will make a lot of issues. So next, we need to ensure we have the correct versions of the necessary tickets, including the Luna, Anaconda, and PyTorch. And by the way, we do not recommend TensorFlow, because the version between TensorFlow 1.x to TensorFlow 2.x is getting too weird. And it's really hard to use and not that useful and convenient than PyTorch. So as you can see, many open source projects now in GitHub, they use PyTorch. So it's just a open source tools by Facebook. So so at least in an academic area, they use PyTorch more often. So CUDA provides a software API to accelerate your model using parallel computing and serve as the hardware foundation of the GPU-based computations. And Anaconda, as we've seen the command line, helps create a virtual Python environment, simplifying package management and deployment. And finally, PyTorch will be our primary deep learning library for implementing models, allowing us to leverage both CPU and GPU resources effectively. And once we are familiar with the toolkits, the next step is to ensure that our hardware and the driver configuration is correct. It's actually, it's pretty tricky at first, because for NVIDIA, the CUDA should cooperate with your Linux driver version. For example, the latest CUDA 12.6, you should with Linux driver version with no more than 560, and it's crucial to match the correct driver version to avoid compatibility issues, and also ensure the optimal performance during the training of the program. Here I won't go so many details about installing CUDA here, but I will introduce a batch of useful commands later in the tutorial. And once you have the correct machine or server with the appropriate NVIDIA GPU driver and CUDA version, and you can create your own type of virtual environment using CUDA. Especially when you're sharing a server with others, you can just divide each virtual environment according to your project. For example, you are implementing a project for the paper .NET, you can just create a Conda environment for .NET. That's convenient to you to manage your project too. So, you can refer to the official Anaconda documentation here for the Linux-based installation. And the main command will be conda create and conda activate commands to manage your virtual environment. And usually the first step is to install. After you create an environment with the specific version Python, for example, the Python 3.8, and then the next step will be install the PyTorch. Python and PyTorch is two basic packages. Will be two basic packages in your environment. So let's take a look at an example of implementing the classic .NET architecture using PyTorch. The paper is called .NET and is published in CVPR 2017. It's a classic paper, maybe some of you have heard of it. And it's a foundation paper in 3D.Files. It's designed for point cloud classification or segmentation, and you can analogy to image classification and image segmentation. It's just the dimension is lifted, but so many techniques are becoming different between 2D and 3D. So the classification and segmentation tasks means we assign a class label, which is represented by the output score to the entire class for classification, and for segmentation, we assign a per point labels for each point of the point class. So it will multiply a matrix by n matrix. So if we focus on the input of the outputs, the input of the paper is n by 3 matrix, means n points, and each point has 3 coordinates. X, Y, and Z. And the output dimension will be K scores for K candidate classes, and the segmentation output will be N by M scores for N points and each of the M semantic subcategories. So it's important to know that the original .NET paper was implemented in TensorFlow because you know, before like 2018 or 2019, it's very popular to use TensorFlow 1.x version. But after 2019, it's like PyTorch gradually dominates the open source project. So now we will focus on PyTorch implementation by the CI22. Let's post it in this GitHub link. And so it will make us with a more clear mind to understand the process better, to ask these questions before. So firstly, which data sets are being used? It's quite important. If there is no data, so no training will be followed. So the implementation use model endpoint and ShapeNet to popular pretty data sets, and both of which are publicly available. And the dataset class code will be found in the dataset .ur file. And secondly, what tasks are being performed? And what metrics are associated for each task is also important, because it will influence the loss functions that you create, that you implement to train the model. So then it's also important to know that the task, for these two tasks, they use the accuracy and mean intersection over unions serving as the metrics respectively. And the last is that which file the model are organized. So here we should focus on model of UI file, and it will give us the exact implementation according to the paper structure, to the paper's model structure. So thirdly, the model code is written in such model.py, and then we chain them use the chain.py. Yeah. And finally, we can run the entire chain process by calling these commands. And so now we have a high picture of the structure of the project. So it's also worth knowing that sometimes you may find some code, especially in 3D processing or some popular projects like rendering-based projects like some 3D Gaussian or the NeRF, and they often implemented not only Python language, they also incorporated the C++ language, and also the C++ language they associate with some CUDA programming too. So as indicated by .cpp and .cu files in the repository. So the author often use the code to provide usually to provide the compilation script called build.sh. And so keep in mind that when you came across this kind of project, you should just set up the compilation before you run any further codes. So now let's walk through the codes we mentioned earlier, which is available on the GitHub website we provided. Due to the line limitation, I cannot cover all the codes, every details, but if you have any future questions, you can contact me. The whole picture is more important for LE project, so we will highlight the most important points so that you can learn by reasoning on your own. So the code base can be divided into three main parts, as shown in the code tree on the right side. And the first part is the chaining process, chain classification.py, if you focus on the classification task first. And the second part is the data processing. Data processing is usually found in the dataset UI. And the third part is the model building and the model of the world. And it's important to know that in PyMOS, both data sets and models are built as classes and inherited from other classes. So if you have the foundation like C++ and data structure and algorithm, it will be better. And while you may seem tedious, but it's important when reading this course, it's important to think of yourself as a computer instead of a human being, and follow the code to understand how the source data is processed step by step, especially at your first project. And it's really important to understand each code, each line of code, what they do. And just now we can pay attention to the dataset class code in this place, and which are divided into three main tasks: initialization and item fetch function and the rank fetch function, and it's organized in a class called model rank dataset class. It's inherited from the torch class called torch data dot dataset, and the data will be imported by some package in the head class of the suite. So before getting further, here are the visualization of two big data structures we usually use. First is the point cloud, which also is represented by the matrix by 3. And the second is the polygon mesh data. It's usually configured by so many triangles to cover the surface of an object. So now here is the initial part, initialization part of the model that we code. And we can see that it mainly defines some important parameters, especially some user parameters. And we should focus on the number of points you are changing. For example, for coin app, they change the numbers from 2000 to 1500. And some other project, they use 1024 or 2048. And we should also focus on the stage that you are specific to the code. If the split is chained, then we just walk across the chaining dataset, and if the split is test, you just walk through the test dataset. And often they use data aggregation, just as also used in so many image-based projects. But here for 3D point counts, the usually augmentation will be like filtering the points by randomly applying some offsets of each point, so then you can increase the size of your data sets to make a model that you change more robust. So it's pretty useful idea to follow some common practice for the data manipulation, because usually in the paper they just post in archive or the some conference, they seldom talk about the data manipulation tricks, but sometimes you can find in the code. So there is a little bit gap between the paper and the code. And this is the item fetching functions. So the main purpose of this function is to get the point set itself, to fetch the point set from the data set. For example, if you have, for example, 100 point counts, you fetch each point count, which is by 3 matrix, loaded as NumPy and then loaded into PyTorch tensor, using the torch from NumPy connect. And usually they use both 32 as their accuracy. And which is usually 64 type. And if you open the data annotation, you will just here they use random quotation to get more data sets for this project. And also it's important to know that the difference between training and testing data set is that for training data set, they often fetch randomly, by randomly shuffle the point sets to make the training process more robust instead of overfitting the data. So just make sure that you have noticed the random task in the training data sets. Also, usually the random operation is more than the operation in the test part. Because in the training part, we usually not only we have to shuffle the point sets, we also need to shuffle each samples of the index inside the data set. Because if you're not doing this, your train model will be overfitted, like they remember all the index, like 0 is which data, 1 is which data, then it doesn't make any sense. And so now we talk about the model class. So here is the help link to the Python tutorial to get familiar first. In case you do not have some foundation idea of the neural network, because in Python tutorial itself, the official tutorial, they have rich short resources to help you to walk through the simple layers of that right before you get into this complicated designs of each different paper. So if you want to know the basics, it's a useful link. And so for the model here, the main two parts is the initialization and the forward. And the forward means the feed-forward process of the model. And you can just recognize the forward procedure when you read along the paper, usually the paper 1 or paper 2, the model structure figure. And you can just compare that figure and with the code and see the designs and get more understanding of the designs of the model. So here they use the for propagation to pass the input from CalX into these layers, a fully connected layer, and two fully connected layers with batch null and with the root activation functions, and then a third fully connected layers. And then pass by the log sort next to get a finally classification scores. So here is the training process. And before diving into the main training process, here I put some notes on what module is working, use a parameter parsing and some random settings, explanation about each line and what they just did in the process, and to help you to understand. So if you have any details, you can just read this explanation and then maybe search the package itself to see if you have further interest for one package. And here, the most important one is the one noted in the blue stars. The Torch YouTube data is the father class of the data loader, and you can see you will came across of this in almost every project. And the next two blue stars will be designed from the point of code itself. They design a dataset module and a model module under this folder. So we import this and we import some important classes such as the two datasets classes here and the then the model classes here and some useful modules to facilitate the model here. And here we can see the pipeline of the point procedure. So we input the points 1 by 3 into the input transform. And the image transform corresponds to the chip and the feature transform you can find on some classes named by transform in the model.py. For example, the feature transform here corresponds to this regularizer. And then after the input transform, they map the input point count by NLP to a feature space. And inside the feature space, they transform the feature to augment the feature. And then decode the feature to the target dimension they want. For example, here is the M by 124. It's like it will be processed by max pooling and then get the global feature. And the global feature 124 dimension is set by the user, which means the dimension. Sometimes you need longer dimension to let the model to represent all the data centers of your data sets for classification. Its basic idea is to back them into a higher feature dimension space. And then they also pass the global feature to get the final output score K. And this case corresponds to the data set you use, how many classes labels are there for the modules. And here we talk about the data loader classes, and so in the lab they create so many empty objects of the data set class by tuning the roots, the classification tags true or false, or tuning the number of points, the different number of points, and different input parameters, they correspond to different kind of data sets they use. And this kind of designs make the model can be chained under two kinds of data sets, like shape nets and model networking. So it's pretty direct to think that, oh, if we want more data sets, we just add another LF. Yeah, that's one way. And another way is that you can organize them into a module in .py and just import the same name so that it will make your code more clean. But here, it just use the direct if and else if. It's pretty easy to understand. And for data loader, they usually create two kinds of data loader. One is for data chaining data loader here, and they usually shuffle the index of the data sets. And for test data loader, you can shuffle it or evaluate the robustness of your model, your chain model, and you can also turn off the shuffle. If you want to visualize your data set. Because when you visualize data, you want to exactly know which data is index 0, which data is index 1. So sometimes we may turn off the shuffle for test just to visualize the data results. And the number of workers here usually means to speed up the process of the data. It's usually we use parallel processing for data sets. Somebody may be familiar with that if you get some knowledge from C++, because there are so many parallel processing here, PyTorch just pack, pack the parallel processing, and you can just qualify, assigning more network workers. So if you, it's like if your computer or server that you use have so many memories and GPUs and the CPU is also very strong on the server, you can just increase the network worker so that you will just pass the data set more faster. For example, if we set the number of workers 2, and we have 2 workers processing the data in parallel, and we also need to set the remember also need to keep in mind the randomness inside all these processes. And for the training process, first we substantial the PointNet classification model, and if you are in the test mode, you will load the static dictionary. That you this dictionary is that you will get after the training code. After training code, you will save the model parameters into some file called .pt or .pth files, so that you can load it in the inference or test mode. And then we will then add an optimizer to optimize our learning process and use the scheduler to schedule our learning rates. And this optimization tricks and scheduler tricks are usually used in almost every project, and sometimes they have different optimizers, like stochastic optimizers or other optimizers. So in your project, you can just by compare the final performance of the model by choosing different optimizer. It's a one trick to your code to get better performance. And we need a learning rate scheduler is because that for the early stage of the training of the model, you know that usually the parameters in a model is in a random state, and it's like you don't have a road to get into somewhere, so the model needs some bigger learning rate to generate between so many possibilities to find a little to find a way to optimize to your targets. And in the middle stage or the later stage of training, the model already grabs the knowledge in your data set. So you just tune down the learning rate to make it more accurate to find a like refined path to optimize to the final targets. It's also like a trick human will use for learning some knowledge. Yeah. You know, for the first time we just increase the diversity and read so many papers and books. And then after you find a direction or a project that you want to use, you just focus on one different area and direction and make your and set your motivation and make the advancements. And then it comes to the main training loop. And we should first design how many epochs we want to use. And then we extract the data index from the data loader by in the for loop. And also the targets from the data. And the first thing we should do is to move that into the GPU memory by CUDA. Use the dot CUDA. Some people may find that sometimes we can change the code without CUDA or just under CPU only device, but it will be pretty slow and the chain time is totally unacceptable for CPU only chaining. So that's why we need CUDA then we init, we just init the optimizer by zero the graph for the graph to be updated. So and then we set the classifier model to the chain model by dot chain. And the whole idea for the loss is to compare your prediction and target, or we can call ground truth labels in your data sets. So here, the loss is like calculated by the loss between prediction and targets. And just remember to do the backward to let the model train on the loss and update the parameters, and then stack the optimizer to start the learning process. And below we will change, we usually predict the accuracy after like every 10 steps or every 100 steps or every 1000 steps during the training, to just make sure the training is good, is reasonable. And it's pretty useful to plot the training curve too. And after training the model, you can use the touch save as we mentioned before, and you can save it as a state dictionary for the model. And here the PDH is the file extension that for model parameters using PyTorch. And so finally, I will briefly introduce you to some useful libraries for big data processing. And here the introduction is mainly for diversity for you. So if you want to get into some details, and this library and I introduced here have pretty clear tutorials on their website. And first one is the OpenBB. It's an open source library that supports rapid development of software that deals with 3D data, and you can process, load, save, and visualize the 3D data using the OpenBB library. And the PyTorch geometry libraries consists of various methods for the learning of graphs and other irregular structures, also known as geometry learning. So it just read so many modules from a variety of published papers and used to deal with the irregular contrast by graph. And you can import this package by this command. Just put that in your Python script after you install the package in your environment. Yeah. And here are some resources that you can find to because there are so many different situations for you to start your project. Maybe some of you may have a server provided by the partner, or if you are not, and you can also rent your own server with a small account of the money. Yeah, if you have some budget to do this, yeah, you can also rent some GPUs like in this two account platform. And in our group, some of students use this too. They think it's useful, but it's pretty recommending you have budget. Yeah. Or maybe if you want to play it first, the good thing is that they often solve anything. You just open a command line they provide you and run the script, it's all going to go. And if it's a starting point, if you don't know anything. Yeah. And they have so many tutorials too, and you can, maybe you don't want to random or item, you can also just check this tutorial, and they will just give you so many experience with how you organize your data. Once you have your server provided by department or your supervisor, and it's the same procedure in our group to organize this, and maybe therefore they are just as entire. Just as professional as the ones that in the academic group. And if you want to have a free trial, like you don't have a laptop with a NVIDIA GPU and you want to change a small project with small resources, just give it a try. You can also use Google Colab, but I'm not sure if it can be accessed by Mailand's website. But I'm sure pretty of you have the way to cross the wall or what.
And finally, I will introduce
use to some useful command line to for you to
if you want to get an example set up for Conda environment, it can be all read by bash script. And for now, I just create an environment name called OpenSora, and I set the Python version like 3.9, and I use the CUDA path of this 12.1, and this is the Conda environment procedure after you install your CUDA. And for installing your CUDA, you can just simply use this. The website is from the NVIDIA download, developer download NVIDIA.com, and it's CUDA 12.1. I'm pretty sure it's useful for anyone to just run this wget in your WSL. You just download the CUDA run file for you, and you at any like. But here I use Ubuntu 20.04, so if I run this into Ubuntu 20.04, you will just install the CUDA in silence, and then I can check the CUDA version using this is the version. For example, if you use the environment before. And I can check the VCC version. Like for my laptop, I install 11.8. And you can check so many configuration. They will just know that they use on which systems and use CUDA and which Boolean and which Python. Yeah. And make sure you find you pick the PyTorch code, you will save you more energy. The PyTorch project will save you more energy. And then make sure, if it's possible, make sure you have exactly the same environment just as done. And if you're not, you can just try run this on newer CUDA. Maybe it can be success for so many latest projects. But for some older projects, you will be so tricky because they only run under the old version. And the old version can cover the latest version. But the latest version objects usually can cover the old version. So that's a little trick to save your energy for the course project. So that's all for today's tutorial. Any questions now? So you can, if you have any questions, you can just ask here. And if you have